Before we begin the episode with Dr. Sabine Hazen, I just want to highlight some products. Right now, Chroma Light Devices has a fantastic Black Friday sale going on where you can save 21% off. It's so fantastic. These are lights designed for humans. So you can use the link that I provide in the show notes or in X, but use this coupon code BFCM2025. It's unbelievable. Their Black Friday sale going on right now. These are lights designed for humans. These are optimal products for human health. They really put humanity over profits, which I love. I love Chroma. And also Daylight Computer Company. They have a Bright Friday sale going on, a huge discount on their product. So be sure to check out Daylight Computer Company as well. I have mine right here. Once you use the DC-1 at night, especially at night or outside, it's unbelievable. You will not understand how optimal this thing is. And then you can see, there's some notes about spindle neurons. We'll do a video about spindle neurons pretty soon. Some notes about the reading episode. The DC-1 outside and at night is fantastic. You will not understand how good it is until you actually use it, I think. So give it a shot. And then lastly, Fig Tree Golf. They make Christian golf apparel and accessories. So use autism for Daylight Computer Company and Fig Tree Golf. And right now use the BFCM2025 for the Chroma. The Chroma Black Friday deal. It's unbelievable. So check those products out. So now, my conversation with Dr. Sabine Hazen. My guest today is Dr. Sabine Hazen, MD. Dr. Hazen is a gastroenterologist. She currently is at ProGenBiome, a genetic research lab whose interest is to understand the clinical implications of the microbiome. It is impossible for me to sit here and summarize and introduce Dr. Sabine Hazen. Dr. Hazen is one of the hardest working MDs out right now. She is very passionate and serious about the oath and about humanity and about finding cures and helping fight chronic diseases. Surely you will see, if you listen to the episode, Dr. Hazen's passion that she puts forth into her work. So I allow her to kind of just introduce herself in this manner, and you can easily see this passion that I'm talking about. And now, my conversation with Dr. Sabine Hazen, MD.
So I'm Dr. Sabine Hazen. I'm a gastroenterologist by trade. I stumbled on the microbiome when a case of Alzheimer's improved with fecal transplant. The fecal transplant was done. Fecal transplant is the procedure where you take stools from a healthy donor and put it in an unhealthy. This was a patient who had C. diff, a bacteria that people get from being immunosuppressed and in the hospital using a lot of antibiotics, getting diarrhea. And so this patient, we did fecal transplant and he improved with Alzheimer's. From there, I'm the girl that basically was bringing drugs to market with pharmaceutical companies, clinical trials, done hundreds of clinical trials for pharma. You worked for companies like Pfizer and Merck and GSK and you name it. For years, I was the girl that was basically bringing these drugs to market. C. diff was my most recruiting, clinical trial, I would say, where basically when the patients didn't succeed in the drug, from pharma, I would do fecal transplant. And when fecal transplant opened up the world and started showing me something in Alzheimer's, I started paying attention. And then when Colleen Kelly's work of, alopecia areata, two patients with alopecia areata improved with fecal transplant, I started paying attention. And, Sahil Khanna with chronic urinary tract infections improving, I started paying attention. So at the beginning, I started utilizing a lab that was available about 8 years ago. And that lab was not really validated I was getting the same stool sample. I was getting different results. So I basically created ProGenobiome to understand the microbiome. So one could say I went from being a gastroenterologist to a clinical trial doctor to a sponsor where I'm now leading the microbiome research, trying to develop microbiome formulas to fix the disease. In other words, we've been looking at all these diseases wrong by looking at them with, you know, the brain for Alzheimer's, when we should be focusing maybe on the gut as well. And I say as well because nothing is a one, you know, culprit etiology. You know, it's either in the gut or it's in the brain or it's in both, and you got to fix both, or it's in the connection between the two. And so this has been my path. It's a path of discovery. It's a path of trying to understand it. It's a path of survival. You know, COVID was definitely the challenge that got me to pay attention to the septic tanks, pay attention to the stools of patients, pay attention to the data that came out of the stools samples in severe COVID patients in their microbiome. And then pay attention to the different diseases on the, you know, and their signature microbiome that we saw. So it's really a vision that I have. And it was a path that was kind of almost, you know, designed for me to be in this position, you know, as the girl who does gastroenterology, who does fecal transplant, who did clinical trials for pharmaceutical companies. You know, it was the natural progression, I think, you know, it's almost like the natural progression of disease, but this is the natural progression of my life. So it's taken over my life. I'm obsessed by it. And I think it's the key to longevity. Nothing can be more important than understanding these microbes right now at this moment in time for me. And it should be for everybody else. So in a nutshell, that's me.
Was it the COVID era that really grabbed your attention about, well, the gastrointestinal tract?
It happened before COVID. You know, we were, as GI doctors, we were doing fecal transplant with patients on C. diff. And, you know, nobody was really watching us doing fecal transplant on patients with C. diff. And then, you know, when fecal transplant became a pharmaceutical product and it went into clinical trials, we were stopped as gastroenterologists from doing fecal transplant in a way. Like, let's say you want to use the microbiome of your wife or your kid for C. diff, and you go to a GI doctor right now, you cannot. Mainly because there are no testing. There are no labs that are testing the stools of a donor adequately. And when you call, you know, the lab cores of the world and the, you know, the Quest, they will tell you, well, why are you testing the donors? There's a pharmaceutical product available. So I think that it happened before COVID. I think COVID, that was the beginning. But COVID really, you know, opened my eyes to the narrative, to the power of lobbyists, to the power of pharma, to the power of, you know, influencers. And by influencers, I mean politicians on both sides, right? And all that interference that happened during COVID with suppressing a treatment, early treatment. Now, obviously, there's no early treatment that's a magic bullet. We know that, you know. Some people tried, you know, early treatment and it didn't work. It probably didn't work because it was just a single drug was given to them and not that combination, you know. When we think about when you're making a pie, you don't make a pie with one ingredient. Mm-hmm. You need multiple ingredients, right? Mm-hmm. We're trying to heal people and we're saying, well, here's a shot, here's a drink, here's a pill, and you're going to be fixed. Your problems are going to disappear. No, it doesn't work like that. It's really the art of medicine. It's really the art of understanding the disease, being a detective, right? Mm. When people call me, I had a patient the other day call me and their assistant wanted to give me the history. And I said, I don't want the history from the assistant. You don't know if the mom, you know, had Alzheimer's if the mom had, you know, had, was taking drugs, if the mom, you know, so, you know, it's great that there's, you know, these people that are taking care of, you know, kids, but ultimately we have to give the history. We have to get the history from the person, right? Mm. Like, I would not ask your mom for your history for a medical condition. I would basically ask you directly, because there are some things that you may not want to tell your mom. And there are some things that I, as a physician, need to get from you. And it's really the art of medicine. It's the art of bonding with a patient to get to know that they have been molested, that they have used drugs, that they have, you know, anxiety problems, that they're suicidal. It's not something that people are just going to put on a piece of paper. Mm. How many people do you know are going to confess that they're alcoholics on a piece of paper? No, you have to get it out of there. Mm-hmm. And I really got to see that art over 30 years of practice, you know, where I had a patient with chronic pancreatitis and I would try to understand what's the cause of the pancreatitis. And I would say, are you sure you don't drink? And he would say, no, I'm not drinking. I don't know what's the cause. It's probably my cholesterol. It's probably this, that. And come to think of, and then after like six visits, he finally confessed to me he was a heavy drinker. He would wake up in the morning and crave alcohol. But it took that relationship, right? It is really a patient-doctor relationship to get that history. And, you know, when we talk about autism, it's very important to understand that it is really that patient-doctor relationship that helps us understand, is the kid a microbiome problem? Is the kid a neurological problem? Is the kid autism caused by an environment? You know, he's living in an environment full of mold and toxins, right? Mm. He's living in a house and plants around him are creating a toxicity that is causing him to have problems. So it really is detective work. And the only way to do that detective work is to really have that patient-doctor relationship.
Yeah, that's lost, I think, because of that narrative about maybe just prescription first and fast. Maybe, I don't know, I'm just guessing.
I think prescription first and fast is always the go-to. You know, people are, well, let me try this pill. You know, maybe it'll work on my kid. But what they don't realize is that you try the pill and you just aggravated your kid's microbiome. And there is a point where you cannot turn back, you know, where it is irreversible, okay, where you cannot, you've done so much damage that you cannot go back and fix the kid because you've burned the mucosa. You know, think about the, you know, you have a mosquito in your house and you're using a machete and you're basically trying to kill the mosquito, but you just destroyed the house. And, you know, it's the same thing. I have to think with kids with autism, sometimes they just have a small thing that needs to just be tweaked. And the parents do, and that small thing needs to be tweaked. And then you have to like see it grow. Okay. So in other words, I see the microbiome, it needs to be tweaked. I tweak it. And I see a little bit of improvement in the microbiome, but I don't see the clinical picture yet, right? Because the clinical picture is going to take, you know, 6 months, 9 months, a year to see. But what happens is these parents are doing a treatment and then they're going, ah, it's not working. Let me go to the next person. So they're shopping doctors because they themselves are very anxious because they live in an environment with a kid that's super anxious, that's running around, that's, you know, not verbalizing, that is in pain, but not telling them that they're in pain, right? Yeah. So when you see that, you see these parents are very anxious. They want to fix their kids right away, but they don't realize it's not a one pill fix and it's not a one pill fix in one day. It is truly, truly, you know, continuous treatment, observation, and controlling all the factors, controlling the environment, controlling the foods, controlling the diet. It's not simple. And the moms who have succeeded in treating their kids on their own understand that, that it was a challenge and they felt it with their gut feeling that this was the right way to do it. Let's continue changing the diet. Let's continue changing, continuing the vitamins. Let's continue that. And then the persistence and then the kid improved. Okay. Now, the problem is that there's not a lot of data on autism right now. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these moms are listening to one person who, you know, was helped with leucovorin, for example, and or one person that was helped with fecal transplant. So they try things on their own, but they don't have the modalities or the tools to really help them see if their kid is really on the improvement side or not. And because they don't have those tools to see if their kid is improving, they're continuing on the wrong path. So this is where the science is really not defined yet, right? We just finally, you know, are all awake onto the problem that we have with autism. You know, this was, to me, that was a bigger problem than COVID, to be quite honest, because when you see 1 in 12 kids and 12 boys in California, 12.5 boys in California have autism, we have a problem, right? And so, you know, when you saw, and it's not just autism, it's chronic diseases. It's COVID. It's long COVID. Look how many people were infected with COVID. Look how many people died with COVID. That right there gives you an idea of what's happening to humanity. And we're not done with COVID, right? So, you know, the problem is that until we start analyzing all the factors that we're doing that's destroying the microbiome, we're never going to advance medicine. And until we stop retraction of papers, censorship of doctors that are trying to help these kids, we're not advancing, right? And this is what I've realized, right? So remember, I'm the girl that started from as a Malibu gastroenterologist, right? There's no better place to be than Malibu, you know, the physician to like the celebrities, right? And what have I done to celebrities all these years? My celebrity patients, they don't want drugs. They don't want pharma. They want innovations. They want to be done. They don't want to go back to their doctors. They don't want to have an injection every 6 weeks for Crohn's disease or biologic. They want an innovation that they can go back and say, you know what, I'm back to normal and I'm healthy. So, and those are the people that have the funds. Those are the celebrities. So I went from a gastroenterologist in Malibu to a clinical trial doctor that does clinical trials for pharmaceutical companies to being on the front line trying to innovate a product for COVID to basically opening the door to the microbiome and understanding the microbiome. Remember, I'm not the girl that's an academician. I, you know, if I publish, I publish for other doctors to see what I'm doing. I don't need to publish. I'm a successful gastroenterologist in Malibu, you know? So I don't need to share what I'm doing on my patients. What happens, unfortunately, is what I saw during COVID is this censorship and this, you know, killing the narrative, killing the possibilities that COVID could be treated in early patients. You know, when you see 26 patients that are hypoxic and they are improving and you document that, it's not to document, hey, you know, this is the only treatment. It is to give an idea that sometimes cheap solutions can work for some people, and that's okay. That's the art of medicine. You know, it's not just about drugs that are, you know, approved by clinical trials and by the FDA. When we look at primary care physicians are dealing with complex patients, right? So they give a cholesterol medication, then they give a hypertension medication, then they give an anti-reflux medication. What are they doing? They're doing combination treatment right there, right? They're taking the history of the patient and they're basically saying, my patient needs A, B, C, D, because this is what I know that's going to kill them. And I'm going to try to give them A, B, C, D of drug. Now, the FDA doesn't come to every family medicine doctor and says, oh, I'm sorry, you've just combined A, B, C, and D. you need to now make it a drug into a clinical trial, and therefore it needs to be approved. No, the FDA understands this is the art of medicine, and we need to let primary care doctors treat as such. Now, oncologists are trying to do the same thing, where they're combining, you know, treatment, chemos, and basic and immunotherapy. And, you know, the FDA wants a protocol but is that right? I mean, they're oncologists. They're on the front line. They're taking care of those patients with cancer that are dying. These patients don't have time for the oncologist to write an IND, to submit it to the FDA, to wait 6 months. Look, my protocol for familial FMT, in all honesty, should have never gone through the FDA. It should have been, Dr. Hazen wants to use the stools of Dr. Hazen has analyzed enough stools of kids with autism that she has a good idea of what microbes to give these kids with autism, what microbes should be present in the stools of the donors, that she chooses a certain donor and she saw an N of one. Now she wants to see an N of 30. It should be a slam dunk. It's not a pharmaceutical product. It should be informed consent to the parent, informed consent to the kid, if the kid is able to communicate, or the parents take on that job. And basically, it should be done, right, to the with a strong informed consent and lawyers watching, right? Because that's what we are. We live in America where lawyers are watching. So if there's a problem, guess what? They're coming after me. So yes, the FDA got involved. Okay. Yes, they finally approved it, but it took 6 years, you know, or 5 years. I've stopped counting. And it took hundreds of thousands of dollars that we had to raise, that we had to figure out ways to bring the money to bring this trial. And by the way, we still have, because it is a clinical trial, because everybody's calling me to treat their kid for familial FMT. They have donors. But unfortunately, because now it is a clinical trial, we need funding now. So it was one thing to keep the trial, to make it alive. It is another thing that we need funding right now to get this trial going. And here's where the funding goes. A CRO, clinical research organization that overlooks the trial. Regulatory person that reminds me that we need to file a report every year, because I got dinged by the FDA when I did my ivermectin doxycycline trial because I was wearing all the hats. I was the regulatory girl. I was the doctor. I was the monitor. I was the coordinator. I did it all. I became the sponsor, and I was the sponsor. I was sponsoring that trial. So what happened was I forgot to submit a form to the IRB on time and to the FDA on time. I got dinged by the FDA. I don't want to be dinged again. So that means we need a structure. We need a CRO. We need a monitor. We need a coordinator. We need a regulatory person. We need doctors that are not Sabine Hazen, doctors that are basically overlooking these kids. So these doctors can say, yes, Dr. Hazen is right. These kids are verbalizing, right? So all that takes money. Pediatric neurologists are not cheap. Pediatric gastroenterologists are not cheap. So literally, we have till December to raise funds on autism and these kids to put, we have the 30 kids and we have more than 30 kids. We'd love to do more than 30 kids. But in order to do this trial with the 30 kids and then make it a 1,000 kids, which we have all these lists of people that are waiting, we need to finish this 30 kids. And then we need to, and for to start the 30 kids, we need the funding to get everybody coordinated. This is not, Rome was not built in a day and it wasn't built by one person. And this is the destruction of the microbiome in these kids is the destruction of Rome. And we need a lot of people. We need everyone hands on deck. You know, I'm speaking to you today when I could be, you know, lounging somewhere, because it's to awaken people to say, hey, it's time to support Dr. Hazen. You know, I've been at this for too long. I've showed the data, two twins speaking, verbalizing, their microbiome changing. The research won a research award at the American College of Gastro, was recognized by the judge as proof of concept, right? So this is a gastroenterologist, my peer, looked at the data and said, this is, you know, proof of concept. It's time to move on. It's time to advance the field. And by the way, you know, it's not just about feces, right? Because here's the thing. The beauty of this clinical trial is that it's going to tell us who didn't succeed. I'm going to pick the best donor from the family. And if that donor didn't help regain the speech of the kid with autism, then we have to ask the questions, why did that happen? Did it happen because I need to keep implanting? Did it happen because the mucosa is damaged and therefore we need to bring another drug to the pipeline to say, hey, these kids are not engrafting. I'm giving them microbes of their sisters or brothers and it's not sticking. Why is it not sticking? Are they burning it? Is the mucosa burnt? Think about, again, the house that's demolished after a machete, right? So is the colonic mucosa destroyed? And therefore, I need to heal the mucosa first. And there are great drugs to heal the mucosa for that to begin with. And then after I heal the mucosa, then engraftment is possible. Now, here's another thing. It may not be a colonic mucosa problem. It may be that the microbes, the brain is so damaged that it's triggering the gut to be damaged. So I'm fixing the mucosa, but I haven't fixed the brain. And then here's another thing. It could be at the genetic level, right? Where basically genetically, these kids have a problem. We need to fix the genetics. So this is where, you know, my goal, and I'm working with two people right now that are trying to develop two centers, one in Plantation and one in Sarasota, where we're trying to create a universe, in essence, a center for these kids to come in, because we need to monitor their diet. We need to monitor the environment. We need to make sure everything is perfect for that clinical. And we need to have coordinators, neurologists, everybody to be present to follow these kids to see, why isn't this kid not working? Maybe I need to hit them with something else. And this center would have the ability to treat at every level, not just Dr. Sabine Hazen, you know, familial fecal transplant, but Dr. Adams, you know, pill poop, you know, because he's developing his own protocol. Because for those kids that do not have a sibling, they need a solution, right? They have a microbiome problem. That's where the stool bank comes in. So, and that's where the pharma product comes in. So I'm not here to kill the pharma product just because familial FMT might work. I'm here to say, look, there's still a need for your product, your pharma product, because guess what? Your pharma product, we're seeing it right now with C. diff. The pharma product that is in the market right now that they stopped us from doing fecal transplant with, is not working for everyone. So guess what? I'm back to square one, taking my families, my siblings, my spouses, and giving them poop, because my patient still has C. diff, even though I gave him the pharma product. So at some point, we're going to have to realize that. And here's the other thing. Not everybody wants stools from a stool bank. We should have the right, if I have C. diff as a patient and I want my daughter's poop, I should have the right in America, because we are a free country, to choose my daughter's poop for my C. diff, right? So I think we need to be able to allow treatment and stop the censorship of treatment, because we believe that it stops the bottom line and it stops the price of a stock, okay? The price of a stock can still go up, okay, when you have a product that's going to be helping kids with autism. But here's the thing. The price of the stock is going to be demolished if you don't help these moms with kids with autism. Because right now, who's driving the force of the politics and who's driving the force of humanity are moms. Moms that have had enough. Moms who are suffering with kids with autism and or kids with diabetes. or kids with lupus or morbidly obese kids and had enough. And they're saying, what have you done to our kids? Mm-hmm. What has been going on? We've been listening to you and you've made our kids diseased. You know, mental health is through the roof, right? We have a problem. Our kids have a problem. And if we don't stop that right now, and I'm speaking as a mom, you know, and for millions of moms out there, if we don't stop that, this is the end of humanity. The kids are our future. Who's going to take care of us when we're ill, when one in 12 and a half kids is autistic and needs help themselves? I mean, do we even think outside the box, you know? And by the way, even billionaire Roe is going to need a good doctor. They're suffering. They have kids that have that are on the spectrum themselves. So we can't stop research. We can't interfere with science. And we got to let the flow of research going. And unfortunately, right now, what I see is the same, you know, cookie cutter medicine happening. You know, funds are going to academic centers. Foundations are sponsoring, you know, are sponsored by pharma to recruit patients. And therefore, they're not doing other things, you know, that are innovative. That needs to stop. We need to be able to allow every innovation. Never know. It might work and improve. And it doesn't mean that it's going to stop the price of the stock. It doesn't mean that it's going to stop the product from coming to market. It just means that it gives us one more clue to the mystery of life and disease. So I tend to talk a lot. I'm passionate about this, as you can tell.
Yeah, very good stuff. I can't help but notice about, I can't help but mention the censorship. And anytime the medical paradigm says, don't take this, you know, there's no research behind this. It's very telling. And I can't help but mention Andy Wakefield either.
And poor Andy. Poor Andy. I mean, like, Dr. Wakefield was a warrior, you know? Yes. He spoke out of honesty. He spoke out of the goodness of his heart to help these kids. And he asked questions. He didn't even say the vaccines cause autism. He just said, look, these moms are coming into my office and they're saying, my kid got the MMR and a day later stopped speaking, right? And he just said, moms are not crazy. So are we supposed to not listen to moms anymore? Are we supposed to not listen to patients? Why are we gaslighting these patients? I mean, as a physician, the first thing I was taught in medical school is take a history from a patient and develop that relationship with the patient to get that history. We're back to the art of medicine. So what happened to Dr. Wakefield was a bunch of egocentric maniacs that basically riled up against him and essentially, you know, thought that their way was the only way and were not open to something else. The beauty of this is the microbiome now is telling the story and it's saying, hey, guess what? These kids with autism, they have lost their bifidobacteria. And guess what? The studies of Dr. Hazen, which won a research award at the American College of Gastro, showed that the messenger RNA killed the bifidobacteria in patients that before and after taking the vaccines. And restoring the bifidobacteria improved the speech of these kids. So that doesn't mean all the vaccines cause autism, you know, kill the bifidobacteria. That doesn't mean all the vaccine kill the bifidobacteria in everyone. But in a small subset of kids, something is happening and we need to look at it. And here's why I say this. I trained at Jackson Memorial Hospital in Miami during the times of HIV. When HIV was, you know, I admitted 11 patients with HIV, full-blown AIDS, at Jackson Memorial Hospital every night that I was on call. And we practiced then the art of medicine, combination drugs. How do we get the patient out of the hospital as fast as possible? He comes in with a pneumonia, etc. Okay. During those times, you know, it was really seeing what was happening, you know, how to be a doctor, how to practice medicine. And you know, when you look at, and it was asking questions, you know, where did this come from, etc. They gave me courage to practice the art of medicine. But here we are now in, you know, during COVID, we were at the same times. And the reason I said Jackson Memorial Hospital and HIV, the number one rule that we had at Jackson Memorial Hospital is never give an MMR to a patient that is HIV. Why? Because they're immunosuppressed. Now we have a better tool with the microbiome to kind of say, is immunosuppression linked to the microbiome? I think it is. So are those kids born immunosuppressed? And why are we giving them an MMR if they're immunosuppressed, if they're born, you know, with loss of bifidobacteria? Is that the population that is getting autism? Shouldn't we be looking at that? So this is where I want us to go. I want us to be more, I want us to be better at delineating the population that can tolerate a vaccine, can tolerate an antibiotic, because there are times you have to give a vaccine and there are times you have to give an antibiotic, right? In my opinion, you know, and I'm still, you know, with the mantra and the training of medicine where, you know, I believe in antibiotics and I still unfortunately do believe in vaccination because it is a piece of the microbe that you're giving to create the immunity, okay? Unfortunately, what I don't believe in is an unnatural spike protein given to patients that has never been studied that basically, and that's why I went rogue and I and people are calling me an anti-vaxxer. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I mean, I vaccinated all my kids. I got vaccinated and then some, you know? I mean, I got vaccinated with the MMR twice. And in fact, in residency, I got an allergic reaction the second time because I was already, you know, immunized and I already had measles, mumps and rubella in Morocco. So why didn't someone check my antibodies? You know what I mean? So there is a population that we need to be better at looking. Hey, they're immunized. Why are we giving? You know, the question that Rand Paul, Dr. Rand Paul said on hepatitis B in a day one, in a patient, in a mom that is negative, that has negative Hep B titers, why are we giving that newborn at day one? We don't even know what their bifidobacteria is. What if that hepatitis B piece of the virus goes into the blood, travels the gut, and starts eating out the bifidobacteria and creating a bifidophage? What if that happens, right? Do we even think about... Do we think these vaccines stay in the arm? No. Like they tried to make us believe during COVID, oh, it stays in your deltoid. It doesn't go anywhere. No. Everything travels. Everything travels through the nervous system. Everything travels through the blood. We have to pay attention to the blood and the circulation going to the gut. And then in the gut is the waste of everything that we've put into our bodies, you know, from the cream you put into your face to the injection you've put into your arm, all goes to your gut. To the stuff you inhaled, all goes to your gut. So now what damage is it doing in the gut, right? And so this is where we need to be better at focusing on the microbiome. And thank God now the FDA and Dr. Marty McCarry is doing a great job at illustrating the microbiome and speaking on the microbiome, because frankly, it needs, and realizing that there's only a few scientists at NIH that know anything about the microbiome. And I would even challenge those two scientists to ask them, what is Blatia? Is Blatia a good bug or a bad bug? You know, what's Eubacterium? Is that a good microbe or a bad microbe? So until you start, here's how you understand the microbiome. You have to attain a cure and then you go back. Like think about those two kids with autism, right? The two twins. I discovered three microbes that were possibly the culprit of their autism. Now that doesn't mean it's a culprit of autism for everyone, but I discovered the culprit in those two twins. Now, when we treated them after treatment, we improved their speech and they're reading every single books. Those microbes disappeared. And then the good bacteria reappeared because guess what? You got rid of the bad bug. How did I see that? It's the art of medicine, right? Kill the bugs, restore the good microbes, right? By knowing what I know about the microbiome. So imagine if you, now, how did I get there? By being ballsy and saying, you know what? I'm going to try this and I'm going to try that and I'm going to try this formula and that. And the mom is respecting me, and I had an informed consent with the kids, and I didn't go crazy. I just used certain things that I knew would kill one bug and would improve another. And then speech reoccurred in these kids, right? But here's the thing. So to understand, now we can go back and say proof of concept, improve the bifidobacteria, speech restores. Kill those microbes, bifidobacteria goes up, speech restores, right? Now we can go back and say, okay, well, how do we do this in more kids? How do we continue this art, this vision, right? This manipulation of the microbiome. So, you know, science is always kind of catching up, right? So people are listening to my data. You know, when I was during COVID, when I spoke out on COVID is in the stools, you know, others listened. And then pretty soon we were looking at the septic tanks, and pretty soon gastroenterologists started looking at the mucosa of patients with COVID. They started looking at spike protein. They started looking at, you know, COVID in the stools. And there were a lot of data that showed that COVID remained in the stools for a long time. So science caught up to, now we can say with certainty, yeah, of course COVID was in the stools. Yes, COVID is in the stools. How long does, but we, what we don't know is how long does it last in the stools in that individual? How do we get rid of it in the stools when you find it? Are long COVID patients caused because they still have COVID in the stools? I can tell you, I have a patient that has had COVID in her stools for about a year and a half. And I had to get rid of COVID first before starting to regrow the microbiome. Because think about it. It's like you've got ticks, you know, you're not ticks, but you've got, you know, scabies. Until you get rid of every little bug on your skin, it doesn't matter that you put lotions to remove the rash. You got to get rid of the bug. You know, you've got lice in your hair. You've got to get rid of every single little egg before you could start putting conditioner in your hair, right? Mm. But everybody is on to long COVID, and they're all looking at, well, it's a, and they're, at least they're admitting what I've been saying from day one, which is it's a microbiome dysbiosis, right? Long COVID, we showed, is loss of bifidobacteria to begin with. And vaccine injury is loss of bifidobacteria to begin with. So science will catch up and will realize. And, you know, when I talk about a disappearing microbiome, and then there's a study in LA that basically shows that, you know, 25% of kids born have adequate bifidobacteria, you know, this is validating again what I've been saying, that we need to pay attention to the loss of bifidobacteria in kids. And maybe, just maybe, the loss of bifidobacteria is the trigger that starts autism. Maybe, I mean, I could be wrong, right? I mean, this is all hypothetical work, and I'm the first one to say it's all hypo. I wrote the book, Let's Talk SH.T. I could be full of it or I could know it. But at the end of it, guess what? I'm ready to talk about it. And I'm ready to talk about it with the people that are so pushing one narrative.
Yeah, yeah, that's a bad thing.
And that's the problem, right?
Yeah.
Why didn't anybody, you know, I'm, you know, I've done hundreds of clinical trials for pharma, you know. I'm equipped to kind of discuss research. I've done all these trials. You know, if I'm such a good doctor that I can bring drugs to market for pharma, you know, I brought the first postpartum depression drug to market, right? I worked on numerous drugs, you know, for Amgen, cholesterol pills, Pfizer, you know, cholesterol trials, Merck, I mean, C. diff, galore, psoriasis. So if I'm so good in a way that drugs are going out and I've never had a problem with the FDA because we're a clean site doing good research and we bring in the right patients for the right study and our data is clean, great. You know, then why aren't you listening to me when I'm showcasing the microbiome and knowing what I know, having done hundreds of clinical trials for pharma, knowing all the intricacies of clinical trials, knowing what drug combination worked for Crohn's. You know, I did a study for Red Hill Biopharma where we gave a combination therapy for what we believed was Mycobacteria paratuberculosis in the stool, you know, in these patients as the cause of their Crohn's, you know, and I saw this trial. I saw some people improving and I saw some people not improving. So I've been very privileged in my life that I've seen a lot of things in clinical trials, that I've read a lot of investigators' brochures to know all the combination that are used for treatment of cancer, for treatment of C. diff, for treatment of cholesterol, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis. You know, I mean, I've done a lot of psoriasis. I've done a lot of clinical trials to see the direction that pharma is going. You know, there was a time everything was antibiotics for everything, right? We went for antibiotic for an infection, and then it became antibiotics for acne, antibiotics for psoriasis. And then the era of biologics, right? Biologics for Crohn's, biologics for ulcerative colitis, biologics for, you know, psoriasis. So I see the progression, and now I know we're in the feces business because the first company that has a, you know, a capsule of poop is out there. So now everybody's gonna, in pharma, is gonna start developing. And I saw it. I saw it before COVID. That's probably why I went rogue in a way, because I was seeing on my desk, you know, clinical trials of China, Korea, poop from China for C. diff, poop from Korea for C. diff. And I'm like, wow, we're in the poop business and we have no idea what we're doing. And there's like trillions of microbes out there. And to me, that was a way of globalizing too. And in my mind, I was like, why would the poop from China be good for America? We have completely different diets, you know? Why would the poop from Venezuela be good for Americans? Different diets. Why would the poop from Mexico be good for, and I'll give you a better example. Why would the poop from the Amazon jungle be good for Americans when the Amazon jungle is the original microbiome? People have, you know, a sterile person that goes from New York to the Amazon jungle cannot survive the Amazon jungle. They'll come back with diarrhea, vomiting, etc., because they're sterile. They've been sterile. They've never seen these microbes. So are you going to seriously give a microbiome of the Amazon jungle to a kid that's living in New York? Absolutely not. So this is, but unfortunately, this is where money, people start thinking, oh, I'm going to make money from poop. And it's the gold rush. And I'm going to start storing stools from the Amazon and the Amish and, you know, all that. And it's going to work. No, it's not going to work. So save your money, save your space, save your time. Don't do it. You know, preserve. We need to preserve the microbiome of every region. That's it.
Something that's worth highlighting is that mother's instinct that you mentioned earlier, because so many autism moms, MAHA moms, even, I think some of them are calling themselves, their instinct is so good. And they're always right. They always know what's right for the kid. But also having the sticking with the treatment, because you mentioned leucovorin. Leucovorin takes time.
Yes, yes.
Richard Fry was on in the spring before HHS like mentioned it. And it just takes time. And people bail out.
And I love Richard. Richard's brilliant.
Yeah.
He's brilliant. So, you know, I absolutely, it takes time. And evaluations need to be done, right? Kids need to follow up with their doctor to test a CARS testing, an ATAC score, to measure, to have markers that can guide the doctor to say, yeah, your kid is improving. Not just mom saying, my kid's not improving or my kid's improving. So there needs to be a follow-up, right? So, and leucovorin may be for a percentage of patients, mm-hmm. but it may not be for all patients, because mm-hmm. obviously, otherwise I wouldn't be busy. I see, you know, Dr. Fry refers patients to me. So it's not a one pill solution, but hey, leucovorin is a safe enough drug or pill that basically is, because I don't really consider it a drug. It's a safe enough pill that you could say, hey, let's try it. And by the way, nutrition also is safe enough that you could say, hey, let me try nutrition on my kid, you know, let me educate myself on the microbiome, you know, and let's see if that can help my kid, right? So there are first steps that moms can do. And yes, you're right. Mom's instinct is impeccable. And moms are there to protect their kids. They see the danger before the kid sees the danger. And that's why the mom, you know, when you have a mom like holding a kid from like playing or eating something, because they know what's going to happen to their kids. It's that umbilical cord is not really cut. So I think we need to start listening to moms more, and we need to start trusting moms, and we need to pay attention to what they're doing. And there, I would not be here speaking on the two cases of the twins if it wasn't for the mom that was really vigilant with paying attention to her kids, because I wasn't there every day. And she saw something from day one. And she said, Dr. Hazen, you don't understand. They're, I see them. I feel them that they're speaking. I feel them that it's coming. And I said, okay. I mean, you know, it's you're the one, you know, the mom flew in from Tennessee to see me with the two kids, you know. So I started taking care of her and the two twins because of that relationship that I had with her, that I knew she was going to give me good data. You know, she was going to be compliant. She was going to do the testing. She was going to do, and she was amazing. She gave me the testing. She did the CARS, the ATEC scores. She did the stool testing on time when we needed it. That's the kind of relationship that I want, because listen, it's great that I'm helping a kid with autism, but more importantly, my job is to help the community understand autism better. And my job is to write the data. The problem is when we are, when there's interference and even the write-ups of the papers, when my papers are being retracted, for no good reason, completely harassment. I mean, the journal did a peer review on four of my papers, approved it by my peers, okay? A bunch of investors and PhDs are criticizing it on a website called PubPeer, and basically they go to the journal, and now they have, they are better than the peer reviewers that are my peers. And their voice is heard better than the peer reviewers that are my peers. I mean, there's a problem. We have a problem. That's like a plumber coming to criticize my colonoscopy skills. Just because the plumber deals with poop does not make him a gastroenterologist to criticize my colonoscopy skills, right? This is what we're dealing with here. We are dealing with a bunch of scientists and investors that have an incentive in the stock market and trying to, you know, mess up the stock price for others that are coming in and censoring the data and harassing the journals. And that's a problem. Yeah. So, you know, and they're all anonymous. So you don't even know who they are. You know, if I have a person that's going to criticize my paper, say it to my face, you know. When I criticize a paper, I say it to the physician's face, okay? And guess what? The majority of times the physicians are like, yeah, you're right. But, you know, these criticisms of, hey, we're retracting a hypothesis because of the fact that you quoted people whose work was retracted after my paper was published, right? They were retracted after my paper was published. So that's not okay. That doesn't retract a hypothesis. Okay. So, you know, it was ridiculous. The comments, and there was nothing wrong with these four papers that were retracted. And I'm not an academician. I'm not perfect. I shouldn't even be writing my data. The fact that I wrote my data to showcase my work to the world. Okay. Guess what? It was on my money. Nobody paid me. I spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on these publications and this research. You don't want to look at it? Hey, no problem. But guess what it did? You know what it did? It put me on stage because you're now talking to me. And it, and those papers that are retracted are read most than the papers that are not retracted. Because the public is aware now. Because the public is aware because of what happened to Dr. Wakefield. We're back to Dr. Wakefield. That's exactly the cookie cutter you know, formula that they used for Dr. Wakefield.
Well, control the narrative.
Yeah. And Dr. Wakefield was an academician. He was top of the game. He was used as kind of like the picture of, hey, don't defy pharma. Mm-hmm. Look what's going to happen to you. Mm-hmm. We're going to retract your papers. We're going to retract, you know, your name. You're not going to work for an academic center anymore. Here's the problem with me. I'm not Dr. Wakefield. I'm a girl with a chip on her shoulder. I'm the girl that was told, you can't be a doctor. You can't be a gastroenterologist. You can't be a mom and a GI doctor. You can't look at the microbiome. And every time someone says to me, you can't, they turn me into a hurricane. And that's it. Because I'm a woman and I'm a Leo. So hear me roar. And if I'm that person, there are a million women just like me. And in a way, you know, it's hard to hear from a woman, right? But ultimately, we are the mothers of humanity and we are birthing these kids and we have to have a voice. Mm-hmm. And this is my voice speaking out on the microbiome, speaking out for our children, representing millions of moms out there. We're tired of being divided as the mom who works and the mom who doesn't work. We're together on this, okay? Because we're together on with our kids. We realize it's a challenge to do it all, you know? And for a woman like me to be on the front line, there were sacrifices that were made, you know, that I wasn't there, you know, for my kids. So, you know, it's a problem. But I'm there because I realize that if I'm not speaking as a scientist, as a gastroenterologist, as a clinical trial doctor, as a woman who was on the front line of COVID, as a woman who is treating kids with autism, who is going to speak? Mm. We saw who spoke during the pandemic. Yeah. Very few, very few. In fact, very few women spoke during the pandemic or were put on stage, by the way.
Yeah, Mary Tally Bowden maybe is a good one.
Yeah, Mary. Yeah, very few. Molly. Yeah.
Do you have time for some questions or do you have to go?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I'm interested whenever you said that 25% with the bifidobacteria, is that after or what? At what point can they
get? I don't know because I didn't do that study. So.
Okay. So is getting the bifidobacteria checked something that you would recommend? And how does that happen?
The problem is that the majority of tests out there are not validated. So they're just not validated. So in other words, you test with a lab and it tells you you have zero bifidobacteria. Can you really trust it? Did they go deep enough to look at that? So parents can test with us under a research protocol. We test a lot of babies. We love babies poop to just get more data. But unfortunately, it is expensive because of the fact that, you know, it is deep sequencing. It's whole genome. In other words, we see every single microbe and it's deep. The foundation pays for a portion. The Microbiome Research Foundation pays for a portion of those stool testing. We also put people that cannot afford it on a list. So whenever we have a study or whenever we get funding, we get grants. This is before Christmas, so I encourage everyone to donate to the Microbiome Research Foundation. This is how we advance research on the microbiome. And essentially what we do is when we get a grant, we start looking at our database and say, okay, let's approve 100 kids to be tested for free. And I'll usually put it on Twitter, on X, sorry, and I'll basically say, looking for 25 diabetic kids. That's because we got a grant to test 25 kids with diabetes, or looking to test Manuka honey, which we did a study. So we're looking for patients. We, by the way, right now, we have an amazing study, which actually I'm very proud to say I was part of this. This was a drug that actually increased the bifidobacteria that we discovered. But we need to see more. We just discovered it in one patient with ALS. And so we're looking, the drug was actually approved for pancreatic cancer. And this is a great product that is working on the microbiome and working on the immunity of these patients. We're looking to recruit for those studies at some point. So I'm still working with people that have innovative products that are righteous, that want to see the data coming out. I'm still doing clinical trials for companies and for pharmaceutical companies, because I'm not there to destroy pharmaceutical companies, okay? I'm there to, listen, if you have an innovation, I understand more than anyone that research is expensive. And so, you know, drugs are expensive because they have to pay off the research, right? But ultimately, we also have to give an opportunity for drugs that are over the counter to see the light for those people that cannot afford to wait for the drugs to come to market. So, you know, this is how I do research. You know, I'm always looking at new innovations. I'm always looking at what's best out there. And now I'm looking at all these protocols with the eyes of what's good out there, but what would not hurt the microbiome. So when I'm looking at a drug that I'm going to take on as a clinical trial doctor and as a site or CRO, it has to be a drug that I feel like would not hurt the microbiome. So that's what I'm working on.
Are there alternative lab tests or any kind of test?
Well, it's coming, but I think we have to, before we make a claim, unfortunately, there are, you know, standards set up, right? There's, you know, steps that you have to, you know, standard operating procedures that you have to kind of follow, right? Mm-hmm. When, before you say a test, this is the test for autism. Of course, my goal is to bring this technology that I've developed to the market as a consumer product. But in order to do that, it needs regulatory. Mm-hmm. It needs somebody to have discussions with the FDA. It needs another CRO, not me, because now, you know, I cannot be the CRO that's doing the research and talking to the FDA and be the sponsor. You know, it's kind of like biased. I want other people to kind of say, yeah, you know what? This test that Dr. Hazen developed has a purpose, and it could be a consumer product, or it could be a lab developed test. We are a CAP and CLIA lab. But before we develop a lab developed test, we need to, you know, I have a very, very harsh, strong-minded pathologist who basically, and I have a team. I have a team of scientists and I have a team of pathologists that keep me legit, where if I say, well, I want to bring out this test, they're like, no, you haven't done A, B, C, D. And so they keep me on my toes. And that's a good thing, because you don't want to have a test. We all saw what happened with Ubiome. The test came out, you know, doctors were using it. They were billing Medicare. And then there was a double billing and triple billing of that test with no validation from the medical community, right? In other words, we have to get the doctors on board with this to say, yeah, there's a need for this test, right? And yeah, this test is useful. Kind of like when we started looking at hepatitis C, there was a genotype of hepatitis C that told us the patient has hepatitis C in the blood. But then there was also a quantitative hepatitis C test that said, yes, there's a quantitative hepatitis C test. So those are the tests that basically need to come out for autism. But before that comes out, I need to convince the authorities. I need to convince the FDA that there's a purpose for this. I need to convince the doctors that there's a purpose for it, because right now this is as beautiful as this is and as hopeful as this is, light at the end of the tunnel. It is still, you know, years away, because we have to do the right thing. And, you know, luckily we have a government right now that is a little bit better at expediting. And we have the MAHA movement that is on this, that wants to see success, that wants to see cures. So I think we're better positioned to bring on the technology and bring on all that. But, you know, this is where there's a lot of work that needs to be done. So for parents, I would say, you know, join our clinical trials. for autism. And if at least put your name on the list. So ginger@progenabiome.com is who basically gets the names. Contact her, put your name on the list, and we will call you when we do get funds. I'm working really hard to get funds for all this. So this is a big undertaking, right? One in 12 and a half kids with autism in California, boys in California with autism. This is a big undertaking. And this is an undertaking that's not here to just light up the problem of autism, you know, like all the foundations and everything, but it is here to try to push the treatment path, to try to push the cure path, because that's what we need. But before we say a cure, we need to have agencies and other doctors validate all that and say, yes, Dr. Hazen is right or wrong.
Okay. I'll put all that information in the show notes too. And
thank you.
Yeah, definitely. So I have a kind of a random question because I'm a big fan of Dr. Jack Cruz, the neurosurgeon and quantum physicist. I heard him and you on Alexa's podcast, and you talked about maybe doing bifidobacteria and red light.
Yes, yes. We started with a couple samples, nothing we can discuss.
Okay.
We got Jonathan Otto actually sponsored us a big red light panel. So I'm excited about that. I have to get together with Jack. And you know, if you know anything about Dr. Cruz, he's very hard to get a hold of. You almost have to fly where he is, right? And I, you know, he's a brilliant physician. I'm not so sure I agree with his controversial and getting involved in the politics. I try not to blame anyone for anything. I try to I blame the microbiome. I try not to look at people as my enemies. I just try to look at them as, hey, they're missing microbes. Even the people, by the way, even the people that retracted my papers, I don't look at them as enemies. I look at them as, okay, you know, upset about the fact that their company, you know, went under, upset about the fact that they probably have a lack of microbes. But I also look at them as, it's a shame because these people are actually very intelligent. So I just wish they would cut, instead of using their intelligence on destruction, I wish they would use their intelligence on construction, right? Instead of looking at the problem of the paper and retracting the paper, which is a waste of time and energy for everybody, put your energy into looking at the microbiome with me and give me the negative that I'm not seeing, because I'm seeing it with one set of eyes. I would love to have the person that is, you know, retracting my papers come to the lab and say, no, you forgot to look at that. Because I know that she's going to eventually bust me on not looking at that. So why bust me? Stop the busting and let's work together so we can both look at it. And, you know, we're both women, so we can both look at it together with the eyes of scientists instead of looking at it with, oh my God, I'm going to retract her papers because she's trying to do something that I should have been doing. You know, there's no point. There's enough business in reconstruction and in construction than in demolition, okay? We've demolished enough. It's time to build. And there's business for everyone, you know? When a gastroenterologist calls me and he says to me, where do you do this procedure? How do you do it? I help them, not because I need to compete with them, but because I want them to shine so they can help their patients. You know, I created the Biome Squad to educate doctors on the microbiome. I could have just kept all this to myself and just started the Hazen centers around the world. But no, I want other doctors to shine. I want them to go on stage to talk about what I'm talking about. That's the biggest, you know, mission in my opinion. It's not, like I said, Rome wasn't built in one day and by one person. It needs thousands of doctors. You know, there was a healthcare revolution that was created during COVID. It didn't take Sabine Hazen or Peter McCullough or Robert Malone or, you know, Pierre Corey or Jessica Rose, Kevin McKernan. You know, it took everyone to support each other, right? We all came together. And, you know, Jack says things that I don't agree with, Dr. Cruz, and I say things that he doesn't agree with, but we could still come together to do an experiment, mm-hmm. right? And so I think that's how we need to come. The autism is the uniter of the world. And right now, research is the uniter. COVID should have been the uniter of the world, but unfortunately, COVID was not. So now autism should be what unites the world. You know, mm-hmm. kids in have autism in Saudi Arabia. I talked to a family from Saudi Arabia the other day with a kid with autism. You know, kids in Egypt have autism. Kids in Japan have autism. Kids in America have autism. This is not a one place population, one race, one gender problem. Boys and girls have autism, you know, and it's not a religion issue either. Muslim, Catholic, Jews have kids with autism. So we need to come together because guess what? The microbiome of these kids needs to be looked at to see what is different in kid in China versus kid in America that's Chinese that is autistic. What is different in kid in China that's autistic or similar in the kid in China that has autism to the kid in America? Okay. Different microbes in China. You know, bifidobacteria is a microbe that's very prevalent in America, and that's our great microbe, right? But it's not necessarily the microbe that you need to have in the Amazon jungle or in the Amish population or in the Chinese. So therefore, that's why we need to start looking at the world and humanity and looking at it with eyes of discovery and not eyes of we need to make a buck on this, okay? And that's hard to do. You know, there's very few people that will look at, you know, a project and say, I'm not planning to make money on this. I'm planning to push the narrative. I'm planning to push the funding. I've not made a penny, you know, since I started because of the fact that I'm constantly reinvesting in the research. I'm constantly reevaluating myself, re-looking at it. And the other thing is this is a huge undertaking, you know. This is thousands of kids that need to be treated, millions probably. This is looking not only at autism, but Alzheimer's, the same formula we did with autism. We want to reproduce with Alzheimer's, Parkinson's. Are there signature microbes in GIST tumors? You know, the other day I had a patient with GIST tumors and she said to me, how come you started looking at GIST tumors? I said, because I had a couple patients with GIST tumors. So that needs funding in itself to see 1,000 stool samples with GIST tumors, you know? So I think, you know, at the end of the day, I embarked on this. Somebody offered me $196 million for ProgenaBiome and I didn't take it because this is bigger than money. This is understanding. This helped me understanding how to survive COVID. This helped me understand how to possibly live longer. That doesn't mean I'm right. Okay. That does not mean I'm right. But this is an opening, a light that I need to follow. And of course I'm going to follow it because what does it matter at the end of the day if I'm dead in a year, you know, and I didn't look at this. So, you know, hopefully I'm not dead in a year to, you know, understand and to continue this path. But that's what it takes. It takes righteous people that are basically, you know, not there all about the money. The money will come. I always believe that if you do things the right way, money comes.
Yeah. One thing that I do love about Uncle Jack Cruz, is he always says incentives dictate outcomes. And it's like, from what like you describe, it's like centralized medicine has become profits over humanity. But like doctors like you take the oath serious. And that's
I'll tell you how I took my oath serious. I was the patent of hydroxychloroquine, Z-Pak, vitamin C, D, and zinc, and most people don't realize was my patent. Okay. It was an idea that I got from Didier Raoul because he looked at hydroxy, Z-Pak, and zinc. But what happened to me was more, I saw that it killed the virus in the stools initially in a couple patients. And I was like, I wonder if that's the answer. And then when I did a I was trying to name it. I put H, A, azithromycin, Z, zinc. H-A-Z was the first three letters of my last name. And I said, wow, God is sending me a sign, right? Because I'm a huge believer of God. And so when I named the patent Haze Deepak. Someone offered me $10 million for that patent. And I said, no, I need to see the data clearly. And I need to make sure that it doesn't kill the microbiome. And guess what? It did kill the microbiome. Okay. So it wasn't the solution. It was the solution for some, right? And in a way, it's kind of funny because interference and research happened, but it happened in a way that was a good thing because that combination should not have been given to everybody. It was a combination that's only the people that have zero bifidobacteria have to, you know, and it's in the severe population. That's who really benefited from that drug, okay? Drug combination. But here's a perfect example. I didn't bring it to market. I could have like pushed it. I could have like brought in, but I didn't bring it to market because I felt this is not the right answer. Now, ivermectin, doxycycline, you know, we did the protocol. We did the, you know, there was again interference in research, but again, was not for everybody. So, you know, I kind of like stepped back, you know, during the pandemic and Dr. Barodi took on, who passed away, he took on the ivermectin, doxycycline, zinc protocol. And I didn't want to have anything to do with it because I felt like I'm not so sure it's the right thing to give. Now, if we make it certain parameters that it's the right thing for certain people, possibly, but then that takes a lot of work. I felt that those drugs needed to be left more for the art of medicine. So, you know, this is where knowing, you know, and I felt that really my job and my role is not to bring out for COVID was not to bring out a drug combination, but really to illustrate the microbiome. And I think if anything, this is my role in all this. You know, in full transparency, would I love to see a stool test in the future being developed by ProgenaBiome? Sure. But, you know, I just don't feel that right now we're there. And I'm being very honest with it. I just feel that right now there's so much to learn. And the reason that I don't feel we're there is because let's say I send you a stool test, okay? You do a stool test and I tell you you have a bacteria called Blotia. And you have a lot of that bacteria, you're going to freak out and you're going to say, oh my God, I need to kill this bacteria. I'm going to do ozone therapy. I'm going to do EBU. I'm going to do all these things to kill that bacteria. But guess what? That bacteria was good for you. It's what was helping you survive. That doesn't mean that bacteria is a good bug or a bad bug. I'm just giving an example. Mm-hmm. Oh, I should have called it bacteria X because people just like take whatever I say and kind of like destroy it. So basically, let's say you have bacteria X. And I'm giving you a report that says you have 30% of that bacteria. You're going to freak out and you're basically going to say, oh my God, I need to kill it. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's why I have to be responsible until we understand better the microbiome. I have to be responsible. Mm-hmm. And you heard Dr. Marty McCarry yesterday or in a video. He said, you know, a few people at the NIH are dealing with the microbiome. And I can assure you those few people have no idea what's going on in the clinical because the NIH is, you know, still needs doctors on the front line that are innovating treatment, right? And that are courageous enough to use treatment. So it takes courage to practice medicine, and especially in 2025, approaching 2026, It's going to take a lot more courage. You know, we're entering a world of AI where AI can be your doctor. We're entering a world where they're going to try to censor as many papers that doesn't fit their narrative. We're entering a world where the price of the stock matters more than the price of a life. And these are the fights and these are the battles. So my only hope in a way is that I realize and what I see are the people that are driving the forces that are driving the price of the stock, you know, are becoming patients. And those patients at some point will stop the interference of research because that's what it takes. So because we're all going to be patients. You said to me, you know, it's doctors like you. I had no choice. I was on the front line of COVID. What was I going to do? Sell a product that was going to kill my microbiome? No. You know, then what am I doing? I'm killing everybody's microbiome. Then, you know, who's going to be my secretary? Who's going to be my nurse? Who's going to be my coordinator? You know, a world without humans is just with one human or one race is just not a world. Okay. We need the diversity of races around the world to create humanity. You know, Think about what the Italians bring to the picture. Think about what people from Mexico bring to the picture, what people from India bring to the picture, you know, China, Japan. We're all beautiful in our ability to do something because we all have different microbes that are bringing on to the puzzle of humanity. Let's figure out the puzzle of humanity instead of continuing of the wars that are killing the planet and killing the humanity. And, you know, you can keep fighting, but guess what? At some point, you're going to be left as the sole human and then pretty much dead. So, you know, hopefully the world will shape up and come together. And I hope so for the sake of our kids and for the sake of humanity. The microbiome of humans is disappearing. You know, we went from before COVID, the majority of patients I was seeing had 6 phyla. You know, now I see a lot of patients with 2 phyla, groups of microbes that share one thing in common. You know, bifidobacteria, out of 1,000 samples, less than 5% have bifidobacteria, and 1 out of 1,000 has lactococcus, lactobacillus. So, good luck absorbing sugar and calcium when you don't have those microbes. Good luck getting out of bed when you don't have those microbes, you know? So, you know, microbes are helping us absorb sugar into our cells to make our mitochondria work. The reason these kids are not verbalizing and when you restore the bifidobacteria is because now they're absorbing the sugar to go into the cells to make the cells work. And now the brain is functioning, the machine's working, you know? So you cut the microbe that helps absorb that sugar. You kill it completely, which is what we're seeing. This is why my mission is save the BIF. You kill that microbe. Good luck to humanity. Okay. And this is not a dress rehearsal. This is not a drama stage or a PR movement. This is reality check. Okay. Reality check is we have a lot of diseases. Cancer is going up, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, autism. Wake up, humanity. Wake up. Wake up, politicians. Wake up. Because you may be on your high throne right now, but that high throne is going to come really down when you develop Parkinson's or Alzheimer's. And now you want a good donor and they just don't exist. Okay.
The art of war. They just want to rule. They don't care who they're ruling over. They just want to rule humanity.
Well, the art of war actually also quotes the, for businessmen to be like surgeons. You know, I read that book, by the way. And it says, you know, as a businessman, you got to be like a surgeon. A surgeon goes into a room with a thick face and a black heart, and he opens the heart and he fixes the kid's heart. And he doesn't say, oh my God, that poor little heart, you know, I can't open it. He goes in as a warrior. So guess what? I read the book. I know how to play the game. So it's time to play the game for humanity now.
Yeah.
Because the art of war is turning against, and it's a woman who does a colonoscopy for a living and plays with shit that's dealing with this. So, you know, and you know, if they want, we got to understand life. We got to understand disease because we're all going to be patients. And I don't know why God chose me for this, probably because I have a chip on my shoulder, but I intend to continue this. And this train is moving and it takes on people. People can come, people can leave. It's still moving. And you can mock me. You can retract my papers. It's still moving. Yeah. I don't care.
Just tell you why.
And make fun of me. I don't care. My brand is Let's Talk Shit. Talk shit about me. Go for it. It sells books. So this is who I am. Take it or leave it.
It's a good spot to end on, Dr. Hazen, I think.
Thank you. And thank you for speaking to me.
I just admire how much work you do. So
I yesterday I felt like I was in a washing machine because I felt like I was taken out of that washing machine and I was like this you know piece of clothing that was just stretched in every direction and I just you know I crumbled, but you know we keep going and you know God help me and and that's it. That's all we can, you know. I think if anything, you know, there's. The big thing for me, the big light at the end of the tunnel is that there is a God. And I don't believe that we die necessarily. I think we just, you know, microbes live on. The body is decomposed by microbes in our guts. And so those microbes are still alive. You know, they go back into the earth and they keep going back and they come back, you know, and they do their thing. So, you know, I believe in the whole world of epigenetics. I believe in, you know, I think there is bigger than this reservoir of microbes that we are. There is bigger. When you see a patient that's bipolar and you change their microbiome and they're no longer bipolar, personality changes with the microbiome. When you see anxiety, depression, etc., change, personality changes, right? So this is who we are, you know? When you see a kid with autism who doesn't verbalize and now all of a sudden verbalizes after all I did was put in a bunch of microbes, you have to be looking at the microbiome, what's invisible, and say, wow, this is amazing. We're just a reservoir for these microbes. Mm-hmm. And how amazing is the power of a divine power that basically created all of us to be different in our microbiome and all of us to be different in our fingerprints. How amazing is that? It's bigger than us. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to the man that believes he knows it all, well, show me how you can live forever. Because until then, you don't know shit. And that's it. And truly.
Amazing.
You don't know it. So.
Yeah.
So that's it. So thank you so much. Have a great day.
Yeah, thank you.
Let me know where it's on, and
let me keep us updated somehow on the red light and bifidobacteria because I love red light.
Of course, I will.
It's a big problem. We're not getting the full spectrum light anymore. That's a big problem.
That's a big problem, and we're getting other lights. Yes.
Yeah, isolated blue light, especially.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, the blue light I think is a big problem.
Oh yeah.
So I think that's. You know, and the idea of sun on your belly, that's brilliant. And I do that myself. And I think that's amazing. And, you know, I listened to Dr. Cruz early on during the pandemic. And that's how I became a fan of his. Mm-hmm. And then we connected. You know, I think he's brilliant. And he just sees what others don't see. Kind of like me. I see the microbiome, you know, and it's not, you know. He said to me, if you listen to the podcast, he said, the microbiome is the screen, is basically the projector. In other words, microbes are secreting light, right? They're they're showing, but we're not seeing the screen. So, you know. He's right. I mean, there's so much we don't know. You know, are these microbes, you know, secreting lights? Are they absorbing light and then doing their own thing with the light, right? Mm-hmm. Is that why the abdomen, you know, you have to put the sunlight on the abdomen? Are we refueling? You know, I was watching Superman the other day, the new movie. And remember, I don't know if you saw it, but there was a scene where he basically is completely destroyed and they put him on a bed, and then they put sunlight on his belly, and then all of a sudden he started restoring. It was like huge, powerful sunlight, and it was right on his belly, and I'm like, wow, they must be listening to Jack Cruz.
Yeah.
Because that is like, that was such a classic, you know, because a lot of these movies, it's kind of funny because, you know, I saw a Seinfeld episode one time, and it was actually a case of mine that, you know, that was basically presented on Seinfeld. So it's kind of funny. And then when you see, you know, comics and et cetera, talking about fecal transplant, you know, South Park doing the episode of fecal transplant, you know, you kind of say, wow, it's, you know, it's kind of fun to see that, you know, Hollywood uses some of the scientific stuff that is out there that we've done, you know, playing with poop. Now, Neil Stallman, who got me into this fecal business, you know, by making me do fecal transplant early on a patient that had C. diff and failed a clinical trial, he quotes that South Park episode, and then he quotes the ER episode. He goes, well, we became famous when ER started doing fecal transplant. And so he does, for those who are interested in Dr. Stallman, he does a great microbiome 101. It's on the microbiomeresearchfoundation.org. We have videos. So there is a video that he did of Microbiome 101. So I encourage people to listen to it. It's great. There's also a lot of other videos out there of, you know, physicians that have been on the front line of fecal transplant. And, you know, Scott Jackson, who worked at National Institute of Standard, who basically, you know, his job was validating the microbiome testing. Has a couple of podcasts, a couple of videos in there. You know, so support the foundation and go educate yourselves on the videos. That's it.